Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Could the 23rd pick be the most underrated spot in National Football League history? Well, today we're looking at the selection that has produced everything from possibly the greatest punter of all time to Hall of Fame cornerbacks and tight ends. From the dominance of Ray Guy to Ty Law and the legacy of Ozzie Newsome, pick 23 is proving breeding ground for legends. I'm Darren Hayes, and you're in the pig pen. Welcome to Pigskin Dispatch. Let's count down the greatest 23rd picks ever to hit the gridiron with our guest, Ed Cleese.
Hello, my football friends. Welcome to day 23 before the NFL draft in 2026. We are leading you right up to the draft in Pittsburgh at 32 straight days here in Pigskin Dispatch. Ed Cleese joins me once again. Ed, welcome back to the pig pen.
Hello, Darren. How are you today?
I am doing great. Are you ready to talk about the famous selections at pick number 23 in the NFL draft?
I am.
You are. Well, this is a great piece of football history here. You know, we are not doing the mock drafts. We're not talking about the current draft, but we will give you some indicators, maybe what may happen in this draft based on history. So Ed, what are your thoughts on selection number 23 over history?
Well, sure, Darren, as you know, I'm going back to 1980. And, you know, we talked a lot about how the first, you know, however many we've done now, nine picks or so, kind of surprised about how kind of like underwhelming a lot of them have been. I remember when we got to the 25th pick, we were shocked at how poor it was. And I just keep assuming that, oh, it'll get better. It'll get better the higher we get in the draft, obviously. And then yesterday we talked about pick number 24, which was an excellent history. And so I was kind of excited. Let's go look at 23. It'll probably be, yeah, let's keep the train going and, you know, screeching halt because 23 is pretty underwhelming. My number, I had a real hard time putting together a top five. Number one is a Hall of Famer. But after that, it was kind of like, I had a hard time with it, really. The pickings have been kind of slim too. Evan Engram, Christian Darrisaw, not much else. And those are okay players, you know, fine. Mm-hmm. But nothing special. And I'd also say it's a little bit of a volume problem, but I thought the top end when I was getting down to the top five was also kind of light. It's a little bit underwhelming. We can start talking about, I found a whole bunch of solid offensive linemen. Riley Reiff, Brian Bulaga, Michael Orr from The Blind Side, was made famous. They were all drafted between 2009 and 2012. None of them had – there's no Pro Bowls among that group at all, but they all had fairly long, successful careers as starters. And that's kind of where I'm at with this pick is, like, there's a lot of that. There was a lot of that at 23, which was kind of surprising. I had a couple honorable mention running backs that didn't make the top five. I had Willis McGahee in 2003 and Deuce McAllister in 2001. For the Bills and Saints, respectively. McGahee actually had a little bit of a better career than I had remembered. And Deuce was a nice player for the Saints. But again, we're not talking about stars here or, you know, people that dominated the league.
Yeah. Well, McGahee had some injury history. He could have been a star. He could have been, you know, something really special. But both for the Bills and I think I forget who he played with afterwards, he sort of had that lingering injury that he suffered, I think, in college. He had a
– it was in the bowl game. I think he missed his whole rookie year because I believe he won comeback player of the year his first year in the NFL. I believe, or was on the list at least, you know, like he was in consideration for it. So he had a horrific knee injury in college in his last game.
Right, and that's how he tumbled all the way to pick 23 too.
He might have having a pretty decent career, a solid career, a good player, as did Deuce. They were both pretty good. Neither of them made the top five, but they were kind of close. In terms of a bust, the only one I really found, Darren, was in 91, I believe, or somewhere around that, was Randall Hill, who was a receiver. He was a Miami kid, played at the U, and was drafted by the Dolphins. And this is kind of a unique thing. He was traded by Don Shula after one game. So his rookie year, he played week one for the Dolphins, and they traded him to the Cardinals. And Shula basically told the people, or I guess the front office, he's not ready, we made a mistake. And he was gone after one game. He actually wound up back with the Dolphins for a year or two later in his career. Never did much. That was really the only bust I could find, a real like semi-interesting story. And then one other guy that I wanted to point out for you that, of course, you're going to remember, and I'll remember him as a kid, was in 1984, your Steelers took Lewis Lips and really blast off like his first couple years. And then you can kind of fill me in, but I believe he had a lot of injuries and his production dipped quickly in his career. But I remember him as a kid because of the name. So Lewis Lips, I always thought that was such a cool, I had his football cards. I thought that was, the Steelers weren't good, as you know, in the 80s. So it's not a team that I looked in Oklahoma saw a lot of, but there was, you know, it, when they were on, like he always stood out as like a notable player because he was good and because of his name.
Yeah, he was, but he was sort of the superstar. You know, this is 1984. Think about it. You know, all the Steelers from the 70s, all our heroes are retired or they're not at their peak anymore. So he was the superstar, and this guy was a tremendous punt returner. And as a wide receiver, he held all the Steelers' records. You know, he blew away like Stallworth and Swan's records. You know, they were the only, you know, I think we had Jefferson too for a little bit back before them. But this guy was on fire without really having a really solid quarterback. And you know, we talked about Mark Malone and Cliff Stout were his quarterbacks, you know, not names that you really want to write home about as being tremendous things, but he was very productive. And but he was such a superstar, they keyed on him. And that's still back in the era where, you know, defenders could, you know, really knock the wide receiver silly. There's still bump and run going on at that point.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. So he was like my last cut for the top five, but because I didn't want to hurt your feelings too much, I put another Steeler at number five.
Oh, okay. I feel so much better now. I won't have to cut you off here.
He didn't start with the Steelers. He wasn't drafted by the Steelers. But in 1996, Jeff Hardings was taken by the Lions. He played center. You know, he was a steady presence on some like middling Lions teams. He played several years at the back end of Barry Sanders' career. He was the center on those teams. And then he ended his career really strong with the Steelers, including a first team all-pro selection, which is, you know, a big deal. And he was a starter on your 2005 Super Bowl winning Pittsburgh Steelers. So a pretty long career, a good career with a couple teams, and kind of ascended and got a little bit better, or at least, you know, started getting some accolades. I wouldn't say he's like a Canton guy, you know, from probably not enough awards and hardware for him. But a really nice career, and that first team All-Pro is something to really hang your hat on.
Yeah, he was probably, you know, next to Jeff Saturday, he was probably that era's premier center, you know, the 2000s. And I was ecstatic when the Steelers somehow got him near the end of his career because they really needed a guy after Dermonti Dawson left. But that was a good pick, good solid pick. So who do you have at number four?
Number four, and this is where, you know, like, oh, this guy was as high as four. I've got Jim Jeffcoat, drafted in 1983, a defensive end for my rival Cowboys. He had a 15-year career. He ended with the Bills in the last 3 years, but the meat of his career was with Dallas. In the mid-80s, Darren, he had three straight seasons with 11.5 or more sacks, which is impressive. He had 14 of those in 1986. That's a big number. And he was a starter through like the end years of the Landry era and the very beginning of the Jimmy Johnson era. And then he transitioned to like a rotational backup player for the Super Bowl teams. He was no longer a starter in 92 when they won the first Super Bowl, but he did have 10 and a half sacks that season. And in the postseason, if you combine the 92 and 93 postseasons when they won the Super Bowl both years, he had 4.5 sacks in the playoffs combined. So he was still an effective player for the Cowboys, you know, from 83 to like 94, 95, something like that. So that's a long time. He saw the good Landry part, you know, at least the latter part, then the bad, and then he was good with Jimmy. So he was kind of a Cowboys legend. He's been there a long time. He really annoyed me as a Redskins fan over the years. Like, he's just kind of always there, you know, kind of a annoying. When I looked up his numbers, I was like, yeah, he's in, you know, he doesn't have like a lot of Pro Bowls or awards and things like that. But that's a really long career with some nice numbers.
Yeah, he's just the name alone. I mean, it's such a unique name. It's a name you never forget, and especially right. when you're an impact player. So yeah, he's a good selection, number four.
Yes. Yeah, so moving on to number three, we're going to stay on defense. This was kind of tough, but I had Antoine Winfield, drafted in 1999 by the Bills. He was there in Buffalo for 5 years. He actually had an interception as a rookie in the Music City Miracle game. Which was kind of like a little fun footnote. Obviously didn't help the Bills win it, but he did what he could. Then he had 9 years with the Vikings, and that's sort of where he turned a corner in his career. His 10th season, he was 31. That was his first Pro Bowl, and then he went 2 more years after that in a row. So he went to the Pro Bowl for the first time at 31, but also went at 32 and at 33. And what that tells me, Darren, is not necessarily that he suddenly got a lot better, is that he was probably overlooked in his career. Meaning, you know, he wasn't a big interception guy or a big playmaker. He was more of like a traditional shutdown corner. And he was probably playing a lot better for those Bills teams than he got credit for, because they weren't very good. And if you're not making splash plays at corner, a lot of people probably aren't noticing you. So my guess is that Winfield was even better than we think he was.
Yeah,
but that's a good career, though, right there.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think he was solid as a Bill, but like you say, he really showed his mustard when he was with the Vikings, because there was a guy that quarterbacks didn't like throwing at very often.
For sure. Number two, going back to offense, we're going to go to 1987, and this is Bruce Armstrong for the drafted as offensive tackle by the Patriots. And you know, this is some stuff really sticks out here is, there was 13 seasons that he played between 1988 and 2000. Okay. He started all 16 games for the Patriots in 12 of those 13 seasons. So that is impressive. He made the Pro Bowl 6 times, over that span. He made the second team all pro team a few times. And one thing that really sticks out for him is, you know, his first 6 years or so, miserable Patriot teams. Those teams were terrible. The late 80s, early 90s Patriots, if you're a younger Patriots fan, you have no idea what kind of misery your older fans had to go through. Those were terrible teams in the late 80s and early 90s, unwatchable. And Armstrong was a very good player on those teams. But like kind of like with Winfield, maybe he was even better, and we just don't know it, because the team was so lousy and their offenses and their quarterbacks were so bad. He got to play with Bledsoe and Parcells. So he did wind up on some successful teams in the mid and late 90s there, where he was remained a starter till he started all 16 games in his last season. He retired after 2000. So he wasn't on the 2001 Super Bowl team. So he missed it. He missed it by a year, but still an all-time great Patriot. And probably one of those guys, Darren, that's like just on the cusp of Canton, but just missing the little something to get in.
Yeah, very, very true. You know, you're having a bad time as a franchise when to turn the tide, you have to change your logo and your color scheme a little bit.
And that was a change. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons I think they did it, because they'd become so synonymous with like, just losing and misery.
Yeah, they had to get rid of Pat the Patriot and Flying Elvis.
Looking back, it might be my favorite throwback. Maybe that's
Better than the Buccaneers.
Yeah, they're both close. They're both.
I love
close.
That orange swashbuckler.
Yeah, maybe that's just nostalgia for me. But yes, when I think of Bruce Armstrong, I certainly think of him with the Pat the Patriot uniform on. even though he played for many years there with the new duds,
the flying Elvis, they call it.
Yes, the flying Elvis. Yes. Yeah. So we're going to stay in New England for number one, Darren. So this is making me a little sick with all these Patriots, but number one's very easy. It is a Hall of Famer, and that's Ty Law. Drafted in 1995, two first team All Pros, 53 career interceptions. What puts me over the edge with Ty Law is talk about a big game player. Notably, it doesn't get much bigger than a pick six in the Super Bowl to upset the Rams. If you remember, he picked off Kurt Warner, took it to the house, probably the biggest play in that game that gave the Patriots their first Super Bowl. Just an excellent player. He had two. This is another one I liked when he was with the. I think he ended his career with the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And he actually had two interceptions of Peyton in his last playoff game. Law's last playoff game that he ever played. He had two. They lost that game, but he had picked off Peyton twice. He also made the Pro Bowl with the Jets and had the most interceptions of his career there later with the Jets. Mm-hmm. I don't put him necessarily with the Darryl Greens or Lester Hayes's or Deion Sanders. But he is a clear Hall of Fame cornerback. And from my research back to 1980, he's the best player ever taken at number 23.
I can't disagree or can't agree with you more if you're talking for 1980. But I know it was a little lackluster for you, only looking since 1980. And Ty Law appears to be the only Hall of Famer. But there were three other Hall of Famers that were picked at number 23. And a couple of them you're going to know very well. But we'll start with maybe one that you're not as familiar with. And that's Bill George, who was drafted by Chicago in 1951. He's a linebacker, very solid player. Gave the Bears that really started him off with that linebacking core that, before the Butkuses and Urlachers and that's Bill George was that gold jacket. These next two guys you're going to know. The Raiders had a very good punter who ended up making a Hall of Fame. A guy was drafted in the first round as a punter and worth it at number 23 spot by Oakland, 1973. And, Oakland was pretty good in 1973, he's coming off of LaMonica, going into Stabler's era. John Madden's a coach. And probably the best player drafted, probably better than Ty Law, Ozzie Newsome was drafted in 1978 by the Cleveland Browns. And great player and maybe even a better executive as he was with the Browns and transferred over to the Raiders and really started that little run that the Ravens have had, and just some great picks.
Ozzie can be a two-time Hall of Famer easy.
Yes, I believe he will. I think he'll get the second nod there because he definitely deserves it.
For sure. And just for the record, I realize that Ray Guy is a Hall of Famer, still would never take a punter in the first round. My team has the number 7 pick in this draft. If you told me there is a Hall of Fame, can't-miss prospect at punter, I'm not taking him. Sorry.
Well, the Raiders are – I mean, Al Davis liked to do that because, look, they took Sebastian, round too, and yes. He didn't pan out as well as Ray Guy ended up being a weapon for him, though.
Little cute for me, but yes, certainly Guy was awesome, no doubt about it.
Yeah, so that's just some neat little stats there. Some other things, so we had four Hall of Famers. If you want to look and maybe get a hint of where maybe somebody will pick at number 23 this year, well, by far. The tackle position has been the most popular position 17 times out of the 90 previous drafts. The tackle has been taken in there. And the school that's been drafted the most has been Ohio State. So maybe one of the Ohio State tackles will be taken to the number 23 spot this year. That's what all the history says should be happening here. That leads us to our draft stat of the day. And this will take us to 1989. Maybe an era that you remember.
Okay.
I remember it. The 1989 draft opened with arguably the most talented collection of players ever, as four of the first five picks were Hall of Famers. Troy Aikman, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, and Deion Sanders. That's a pretty good draft selection right there. And I probably should look up. I didn't even look to see who the guy that didn't make it was. Not to embarrass him, but that's some pretty good players to be – with. Give me a second here and I can tell you. Tony Mandarich, a tackle.
The incredible bust.
Yeah. So
yes, remember he had the Sports Illustrated cover, the incredible bulk, with his shirt off. And then later the incredible bust. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and he was – there was talks that Dallas might even take him number one instead of an Aikman.
I remember, a steroid-era guy.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. He did wind up coming back into the league and having a couple good years with the Colts, kind of a little bit of a reclaimed,
reclamation.
A little bit of a reclamation project, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, so – well, that is our pick for day 23 for slot 23 in the history of the NFL draft. You know, we are going to be doing this. We're going to continue our journey for another 22 days leading up for that big Thursday night in Pittsburgh when your team will be drafting their future. Ed, we really enjoyed having you tonight. We'll talk to you again tomorrow for slot 22.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.